Okay, everyone, continuing with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 96B, still the 3rd of May, 2013, and we have been dealing with the contrast between Capricorn and Cancer, and the two words especially found in relation to the cardinal cross, or let's see, two words especially in relation to the two doors, so the two gates of the zodiac, self-preservation and immortality. Of course, there is a mistaken notion as to the nature of the self, while the usual understanding of self-preservation is operative. But eventually, that tendency towards self-preservation, which is so prominent in the ordinary expression of Cancer, and for the great duration of years through which the human being passes, gives way to the quest for immortality. The quest for immortality in relation to the two gates. And that is the reaffirmation of one's spiritual essence achieved through the sensitizing of the form, through evolution, the recurrent appearance of life, true life, in form, expressing through form, and to the revelation of life in form. So the life aspect, the monadic aspect, or at least that through which life can reach consciousness in an unmediated manner, begins to occur at the third initiation. And it assumes primary importance, though, as I said, not necessarily the greatest power, because until the fifth initiation, the egoic nature, in the triadal sense, is a great power. The monadic nature gaining in power as the triadal revelation increases, but still the domain of the master is the atmic level, not yet the level of the monad. The true release of the monad into its own life occurs at the sixth degree, when one becomes a planetary life, and not before. Release at the sixth degree, the monad is free to travel as a monad along different paths of vibratory ascent to destinations beyond the planet and beyond the solar system. So let us say that all of this begins to be intimated at the third degree. But real monadic life does not begin until the sixth degree, when, except in the one instance of Earth's service, the eye of the monad is trained in a different direction, one that leads away from the planet towards temporary schools, where schooling is offered or still higher paths which lead out of the solar system altogether in most instances. You will see, therefore, we continue now, page 316, you will see, therefore, why the cardinal cross is so mysterious. It has so much to do with levels of life of which we have no real comprehension. We barely understand the consciousness of initiates who are on the levels of the fixed cross, the higher levels of the fixed cross. And perhaps the understanding of the fourth degree initiate really escapes us. Suffice it to say, the creative life of the solar logos and of the planetary logos takes place upon the cardinal cross, and beings still greater than they are find their position upon the cardinal cross, though we would have to say this does not go on forever, because the beings of which we are speaking have to be conditioned by our zodiac of constellations. Once they escape that particular conditioning circle, they may be found perhaps on higher analogs of the cardinal cross, but not on the cardinal cross itself. Beings like Sanat Kumara are still intra-zodiacal, our solar logos, intra-zodiacal, the seven solar systems of which ours is one, still intra-zodiacal. They are very close to us, and still within the general embrace of the zodiacal circle. But lives which are, what can we call it, trans-zodiacal, they would have to find their expression on something other than what we call the three crosses, because they've, in a way, gone beyond the influence of the four constellations that represent our cardinal cross. They are beyond the influence of the zodiac altogether. So that which lies beyond the influence of the zodiac cannot be said to be on any of the crosses. But since the circle of the zodiacal constellations is the heart and the head center of the one about whom naught may be said, we can say that thus the major head center of that being, if we go back and talk about the 12 major petals in the head center of a man as being the major center, then we can see that lives within the ring pass knot of the one about whom naught may be said can still be found upon the cardinal cross. And many Mahamanvantaras separate us from such beings, even from such a being as the planetary logos, who long ago was in a condition of being an expression that the master is now, we are told. So he's saying, you will see, therefore, why the cardinal cross is so mysterious, also why both Cancer and Capricorn are so little understood by modern astrology, and why, in the last analysis, only the initiated sons of God can grasp the significance of the four signs which comprise the cardinal cross, and, you know, here we have to say minimally of the third degree. Why only initiated sons of God can grasp the significance of the four signs which comprise the cardinal cross, or understand the relation which exists between the four major divine energies. Divine, you kind of wonder whether this is relating to monadic levels of the great one about whom naught may be said, where I suppose that's found, those levels are found upon the cosmic, monadic plane, or perhaps beyond. Because we have to differentiate between the plane as an area of expression for a particular being or group of beings, and a plane as the focus for the monad of that being. For instance, will we actually find the monad of the solar angels on the cosmic physical plane when they have already journeyed on various paths, including the path to Sirius, when they have already been, in a way, liberated onto the cosmic astral plane? Maybe not. And maybe the monad of these beings is to be found on higher cosmic planes. Similarly, although we have something called the cosmic monadic plane, it doesn't necessarily, let us see, where is that? You know, let's take a look here. It doesn't necessarily mean that the beings that have expression here are necessarily having their monads on this particular level, because from one perspective, this entire sevenfold series of cosmic planes is simply an etheric physical supercosmic plane. It's not a cosmic physical plane, a cosmic etheric physical, it's a supercosmic physical etheric plane. And just the way the solar angels and other higher hierarchies may have their monadic point or origin or locus or home on the cosmic astral plane, so some of these beings up here, which may be expressing fully on the cosmic monadic, may have their true monadic home on the supercosmic astral plane. How should we differentiate it? Should we simply add supers? Like, you know, supercosmic, super-supercosmic, super-super-super-cosmic, and so forth, until the 10 dimensions of cosmos are reached. Whatever these dimensions really are, and you kind of wonder why it should stop there, except by a deliberate act of will of the universal logos. One has to wonder why things are timed as they are. Whose will is behind that timing? If the eternal parent slept for seven eternities and does so periodically, what is it that determines these seven eternities, and how long is an eternity? It's quite a contradiction, isn't it, when you think of the word eternity as meaning forever, and yet you discover that the great being who becomes the universal logos by flashing forth a ray of itself sleeps. That great being, as it were, sleeps for seven eternities, which are durations of time. So, yes, as DK tells us, we meet with many occult paradoxes on the way, and the mind of man is inadequate to lift the veil on these paradoxes. We simply have to live with them, live in their presence. No, we will not at this time resolve these paradoxes until we are more than man. And even if we are more than man, tiny cell that we are, we will become greater beings for whom there are still paradoxes. I mean, when we're told, you know, that there are beings to whom our solar logos is as a crystal, well, just imagine all the understanding a crystal has of the human being and its higher nature. And thus it is for our solar logos. So how long will this comparison continue? There are beings higher than the solar logos for whom still greater beings look upon it as a crystal or as a cell or even as an atom. So the scope of things is unimaginably great. And when I say unimaginably, I have to mean that word because it's beyond the scope of our imagination to understand these kinds of beings in what we call cosmos. Anyway, Cancer and Capricorn are so little understood by modern astrology, and why in the last analysis only the initiated sons of God can grasp the significance of the four signs which comprise the cardinal cross. This is almost as if, you know, it's like, can we say this? There are non-sacred signs, sacred signs, and synthesizing signs or constellation. Now, you know, can we say that the most developed of all the constellational lords are those which comprise the cardinal cross? Well, it would be a speculation. I'm not sure whether we would be justified in saying so, but certainly the energies which come from these particular constellations are above, higher than those which come from others. So we have to give credence to the idea that there are differentiations between the degree of development, of degrees of development of the various constellational lords. Look at our planetary lords. There are non-sacred, sacred, and synthesizing planetary lords, yet they all work together in a group, in a whole, just like in an ashram. There are people of different degrees, and yet they all work together. So thus it is in the circle of zodiacal constellations, there are distinctions between the degree of development of these constellational lords, and yet they all work harmoniously together, fulfilling different functions. Anyway, the idea is there. It's not that we can become specific about which of these constellational lords are the most developed, but interestingly enough, Capricorn, which is part of the cardinal cross, seems to show up as a very powerful conditioning factor and may well be one of the more developed of the constellational lords. It's a very big stretch, of course, because we're talking about levels of initiation which far transcend those of our planetary logos, solar, and even solar logos. So it's just a kind of a patterning in the mind to see how things might be on those high levels. And it's the use of the law of analogy, that great interpretive law by means of which those things that are incompletely understood can be better, more fully understood. So only initiates can grasp the significance of the four signs and or understand the relation which exists between the four major divine energies, which, pouring through the four arms of this cross, produce the vortex of force, a synthetic force, which constitutes pool of pure fiery light through which all those who take the higher initiations eventually pass. Many hints here. And when I look at the word synthetic, it seems to have a correlation to the synthesizing planets. So this is the synthetic cross, the cardinal cross, is the synthetic cross. And we're told there are four major divine energies. Now, divine, in this particular case, is pretty much meaning constellational. The word divine always relates to the spirit if used with accuracy. So there are other divine energies which perhaps are not major. The energies pouring through the fixed cross, the energies of the lords of the constellations pouring through the mutable cross, perhaps not major. in the way that major is meant here. Now, if we ever become members of the great Department of Astrology and Hierarchy, who draw up the horoscopes even of masters, so one can imagine what their initiatory status might be, maybe we'll know some of these things. But these energies coming together produce a synthesis, which constitutes a pool of pure, fiery light. Victors through clear, pure will, or pure, clear will. Those victors are sixth-degree initiates. They have to pass on the cardinal cross. I suppose a master has entered the cardinal cross and has transcended that no-man's land of the fourth degree in which no cross is the prevalent cross. That these Chohans pass through this pool of pure, fiery light produced by the cardinal cross. And again, it is the cross of spirit, the cross of the higher will, and I suppose regardless of what cross the horoscope of the very high initiate may show as present, they can be born perhaps mostly in fixed signs or immutable signs, the energy of the cardinal cross will still predominate in their lives. Like people of our nature are supposed to be, regardless of what our horoscope may show, on the fixed cross, because we are attempting to understand what the soul is and to become the soul. And similarly, those who are on the ordinary path of personality development, no matter what their horoscopes show, are in consciousness upon the mutable cross. So we see there is a distinction between what the horoscope may show and the cross of consciousness being upon which the human being may find itself. All right. Looking further. Those taking the first two initiations must tread the path as it passes through the burning ground. Now, you kind of wonder whether there isn't some kind of burning ground between all initiations, because DK says that each burning ground is clearer and colder, and he's saying that in the context of studying Rule 1 for those who have already passed beyond the third degree. But perhaps the burning grounds are dissimilar in what is burning and the way they burn and what is accomplished. So those taking the first two initiations pass through the traditional, I suppose, Martian burning ground. Perhaps more a Martian burning ground. Those taking the higher initiations have to plunge into the sea or pool of fire, which is essentially the fire of God, as it has been cleansed from every aspect of the material form through a complete purification of desire. This type of fire seems to be more subplane of the material plane. Okay. This type of fire seems to be more than solar fire. This plunge this deep plunge into the sea or pool of fire, the fire of God, it seems like the first aspect of divinity. The fire of soul is one thing, but the fire of God, this seems to be electric fire. As it has been cleansed from every atomic subplane of the material form through a complete purification of desire. So we're speaking here of higher initiations and higher burning grounds. When we look at the rules, I think the third rule in the rays and initiations, let's take a look. We begin to get the idea of this kind of fire. We are to know that God is fire. We're supposed to make demands based upon triadal realization. And then there will be a response to those demands. When the demand and the response are lost in one great sound, move outward from the desert, which is the, I think, the lower 18 subplanes, leave the seas behind, and we can even look at this as some of the triadal levels and know that God is fire, atmic monadic. So we are now talking about a fire which essentially is higher than solar fire. So each burning ground, let's see if I can find the quotation, it's important. Each burning ground, being colder and clearer than the preceding one, but producing sequentially the burning fire, the clear, cold, lighted fire, and the consuming divine fire. Clearly, we are dealing here with three aspects of fire. We are dealing with fire by friction, the burning fire, the solar fire, the clear, cold, lighted fire, and the consuming divine fire, electric fire. That's what we are talking about in relation to these higher initiations. So let's just say, see, for instance, Rays and Initiations 33. Okay, CF, RI 33. Electric fire, the consuming fire of God. Although there is a sense in which the solar fire of our solar logos, a high form of solar fire, can be considered to be a consuming fire. Certainly it consumes everything within our range of three fires. Our little three fires are part of a much greater fire. So our electric fire is subsidiary to the solar fire of our solar logos. And thus it goes as the trinities and the septenates ascend. The entire subject of rebirth is but little understood at present, in the future more so, right? Its modern presentation and the emphasis which has been laid so strongly on small and unimportant details have distorted and diverted the wide sweep of the subject and ignored the true import of the process. So what he's saying here is, minutiae can lead to distortion. Or let's just say this, that preoccupation with minutiae can lead to distortion. And we have so focused our reincarnational interest on the tiny human personality that we fail to see it as a divine principle. The broad and general lines of incarnation, the incarnation process, have been largely overlooked. The incarnation of great lords, of globe lords, chain lords, planetary scheme lords, solar logoi, and still greater beings. There is a cyclic immersion in matter of different types and different types of waters, it might be said. And we just think in terms of who was I in my past life, in terms of the unimportant personal details. As DK said somewhere, you know, that book, The Lives of Alcyone or Alcyone, purportedly the last 48 or 50 some lives of Krishnamurti, may really have failed in its attempt to portray the process of reincarnation because it focused so much upon the personality and not upon the gain of the soul. I suspect, though, that the authors were not really in the position, such as DK is, to understand the gains of the soul for each one of those personality lives. So the broad and general lines of the incarnation process have been largely overlooked. In the debate as to the length of time a man is out of incarnation, and in the consideration of foolish items of unproved and unprovable information, and in the puerile reconstruction of the past lives of theosophically inclined people, none of them based on any truth, the real truth and the real beauty of the theme have been lost to sight. We have emphasized so many secondary and tertiary factors which, as he says, are not proved and cannot be proved, I suppose, given ordinary means. And for those who could perhaps prove, it would be not worth the expenditure of energy. So it's a bit of a childish approach to reincarnation. Childish, puerile, and baseless, without foundation. That we have had past lives, we do assume to be a truth. But to locate them with accuracy and to see what was the true gain of the soul, well, this may take more time, more research. Cancer is one point of the watery triplicity with Pisces and Scorpio, right? And the symbolism which underlies the three water signs is most interesting in one particular direction. These are important signs when it comes to discipleship. You have, as you know, the crab, the scorpion, and the fish goddesses of the sign Pisces. You kind of wonder whether these are not our souls going forth into matter and becoming identified with and as matter for a long period of time, becoming in bondage to matter and trapped by matter. In ancient Lemuria, the symbol of Pisces was a woman with the tail of a fish. And of this symbol, the legendary mermaid is the memory. Well, I think, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about Pisces? Let's just see. Yeah. Cancer is one of the signs of the water triplicity, and the crab, the scorpion, and the fish goddess of the sign Pisces. Unless we're talking about cancer, I don't think so. In ancient Lemuria, the symbol of Pisces, of course, it says so directly, was a woman with the tail of a fish. Now, interestingly enough, the very first Sabian symbol in those psychically derived series of 360 symbols is a woman who has risen from the sea and a seal is clinging to her legs and trying to pull her back. I think the woman is standing on a rock, which represents land and the material plane and emergence from the ocean of the psyche. And there is an attempt to pull her back. So this symbol of Pisces is showing a pretty strong connection with the very first Sabian symbol representing Aries. So the mermaid is the legendary symbol of Pisces. I know a little Pisces who loves mermaids and is convinced of their reality. It was only in late Atlantean times, when the conscious sense of duality was becoming present in the minds of advanced humanity of the period, that the woman part of the symbol was dropped altogether, and the two linked fishes took the place of the fish goddesses. So Atlantis did produce later the emergence of the mind. And the woman, who is in this case the symbol of matter, was dropped from the symbol of Pisces. And we had the idea of the pairs of opposites, because there was a conscious sense of duality, the higher and the lower aspects of man coming to focus. And this must have meant that among advanced humanity, the second tier of petals was in process of development, because it is in this second tier of petals of the egoic lotus that we learn the reality of the pairs of opposites. So just as the rider, the horse, was separated from the rider, and eventually the rider himself was dropped from the Sagittarian symbol, so we have here a condition of abstraction in which the concrete, more concrete aspect of the sign represented by the woman is dropped and the fishes remain, which are the consciousness within the personality realm and consciousness within the so-called soul realm. There is also consciousness, of course, within the monadic realm, but when we're dealing with a realm of duality, we have to handle that first before we enter into the realization of a triplicity which includes the spirit. You have, therefore, the crab, the scorpion, with a sting in its tail. It's almost like the past can sting you because the tail represents the past. Represents the past, and the fish. These are the three aquatic or semi-aquatic animals. The crab really does have to do with water, so does the fish, but the crab works partially on the land, and the scorpion is more a land-going creature. So one fully of the water, one fully of the land, and one partially of land and partially of water. The slow-moving crab, and this is such an important sentence, identified with its dwelling place and carrying its house upon its back, well, our vehicles are our dwelling place, and we are identified with our dwelling place. We are identified with our vehicles. Let's just say, so many afflicted by the mass consciousness are identified with the personality as a dwelling place. Okay, so the crab is slow. it's identified with its dwelling place, and it carries its house upon its back. It carries its vehicles with it wherever it goes. It lives upon the land, the physical plane life, and also in the sea, the life of the emotions. And that pretty well describes the irrational nature of man. Because the mind has not yet entered into the process in any significant or directorial way. The scorpion, however, is rapid in movement, deadly in its effect. What did we talk about? Directed effort. Deadly in its effect upon men around it, and many scorpions are deadly in their effect upon the human beings that surround them. And as a creature of the land, these are all related to the water signs, right? It is also the symbol of the transformed crab. There's much emphasis on the mind, and is the result, and the result of the evolutionary process. So much emphasis on the mind when dealing with Scorpio. Mercury is very powerful in relation to this sign, being the hierarchical ruler. And Mercury, the mind, also represents the freedom from illusion, which can be achieved through Buddhic illumination. So the transformed crab becomes more a rational, intuitive being. Physical, emotional crab becomes a rational, intuitive being in Scorpio, and indicates the dangerous nature of the man who is not transformed and is therefore harmful and hurtful to others, and I would add, and to himself. We know the story that the crab will, or the scorpion will sting itself if it has nothing else to sting. So this is the self-destructive streak of the scorpion. But this emotional, physical creature, the crab, who is irrational in its desires and actions, needs the strong mental emphasis of Scorpio, in which the power of Mercury and the mind in two aspects is very strongly present. But man is a danger to himself and others when not transformed. Now, fortunately, look at the transformation in relation to Scorpio. What do we have? We have Uranus, the planet of transformation, as the exalted ruler of Scorpio. So transformation is very possible in these signs where Uranus is prominent, as it is as the planet exalted in Scorpio. So Aries and Libra and Leo, Scorpio, Aquarius. These are all planets where there is a power of Uranus, and hence Uranus, the planet of transmutation, transformation, transfiguration, has a full range of expression in these signs, or at least a range of expression which is more so than in other signs. And the fishes indicate the man from the symbol of whom the symbol of materiality has been taken by the removal of half of the original symbol. In other words, as stated, the woman is now missing. The fishes indicate the man from whom the symbol of materiality has been taken. He is definitely seeking to live within the higher of the pairs of opposites, represented by the higher fish, thus indicating freedom from matter, and in the beginning it was not so. For Pisces, we had, what do we have? Go for into matter. for Pisces, we had go forth into matter, and so the woman was very much there, and the souls who went forth into matter were as fish goddesses who had to leap from out their element, become flying fish, as it were, and achieve their freedom. The three water signs give us, therefore, a brief and symbolic history of man's growth and true personality development. We have spiritualization coming to man in Pisces. It is a picture of the law of cause and effect, according to the effects, the causes we set in motion, so will be the developmental effects, and gradually we will make our way from the bondage of Cancer attached to our vehicles, to our temporary home in matter, to the liberation of Pisces, and going through the battlefield which liberation demands, and that battlefield is found in Scorpio. So it is a picture of karma, it is a picture of the law of cause and effect. And these thoughts we can elaborate for ourselves and thus arrive at the evident implications. DK does leave certain things to us. It's wise for him to do so, that way we are not fed every possible perspective and understanding. We have to develop them for ourselves. Okay. I am remembering, DK talked about the speed with which the various signs move. He did not choose the three water signs alone. He chose Cancer, Pisces, and Capricorn. The first moving with slow speed, the second moderately, and Capricorn rapidly. Here he tells us Scorpio moves rapidly, but Pisces indicates greater freedom. Neptune is, in a way, the symbol of the escape from materiality, the escape from the waters of space, perhaps into the fires of space, which Neptune also represents. And Neptune seems to be the most powerful planet in relation to Pisces, even though DK doesn't give it as a ruler in the ordinary sense. From the perspective of the entire human race, Neptune is a ruler of Pisces. And it was Alan Leo who was intuiting this. So, a brief and symbolic history of man's growth and true personality development is given here. The law of cause and effect is operative, and we are building deeper into matter or towards release from materiality in Pisces through our choices. That brings in the Libran element of choice, Libra being related to karma. Our karma is determined through our choices, and we can elaborate these thoughts for ourselves and arrive at the evident implications. He doesn't leave to us too much of the really difficult working out. What he does is allows us to work out things which are evident enough for us to grasp correctly. There is also a significant relationship between the five signs which are deeply esoteric in their nature and their effects when swept into this particular interplay. You know, sometimes we think of the triplicities, the quadruplicities, the movement from sign to sign, whether counterclockwise or clockwise, but DK understands more subtle relationships between the signs as they indicate various phases through which we are passing. These signs are only called into activity during the return half of the wheel of life, or the wheel of living action, or of conscious undertaking, instead of being driven hither and thither as a member of the mass and as a unit characterized by the undifferentiated mass consciousness. So we are dealing with the returning half, when the man is upon the fixed cross, or attempting to live as a soul, and is on what he calls the second return half of the wheel of life. But I might wonder whether it's really a half, because when you kind of look at how slowly things start and continue in relation to the third aspect, we find the preoccupation with the third aspect and the mutable cross taking up by far the greater length of time involved in human evolution. This name is given to the wheel as it turns anti-clockwise from Aries to Pisces via Taurus. This is the best way that he has of describing it. The wheel of living action, or of conscious undertaking, not just of instinctual response, but of true conscious undertaking. This fivefold relationship is only established upon the path of discipleship. So this is definitely a fixed cross relationship, because discipleship, real discipleship, only occurs upon the fixed cross, and is brought about by the esoteric linking. Watch those adjectives. Esoteric linking of five signs in a row, Taurus not included. Let's just say five of the six negative signs. When I say negative, I mean either earth or water: Cancer, Virgo, Scorpio, Capricorn, Pisces. On the path of discipleship, and note that there are five. Note, five signs relating to the fixed cross and the fivefold soul nature. So different stages on the path of discipleship are probably connected with these five signs. In the future horoscopes of disciples, this significant interplay of forces will be recognized as dominating the chart at a particular and peculiar stage of discipleship. He seems to be leaving it to us to decide which stage of discipleship this may be. And I suspect that it is not so much the third degree as found more around the second degree. In this case, disciples will be born in or under, in one or other, will be born, excuse me, in one or other of these signs, or with one of these other of these signs rising. So that's what I meant by in or under. When you're born in a sign, it's the sun sign. When you're born under a sign, it is the rising sign. So we don't have to have all of the signs visible in our chart in order to be at this stage, but perhaps one of them will even be sufficient, and we have to know about the esoteric linking. The moon is definitely involved. Interesting how the moon rules the first, esoterically rules Virgo, falls in Scorpio, and is in detriment in Capricorn, and in general conditions the waters with which Pisces is associated. So the overcoming of the personality, its purification, its elevation, the rendering selfless of the personality. Let's see. around the time of the second degree, we have the importance of Venus, Jupiter, and Neptune. We do see Neptune involved in three of the signs: Cancer, Virgo, where the moon, the esoteric moon, veils Neptune, and Pisces, where Neptune has a special significance. So there's kind of a moon-Neptune connection here. Moon-Neptune connection. And we are overcoming the realms of the irrational nature of man, ruled by the moon and Neptune, and stepping into a clarification of the mind. So this is the path of discipleship, and we note that he did not say the path of initiation. This will help us somewhat understand. And sometimes when dealing with the path of discipleship, he really means the path of accepted discipleship, in which Mercury and Saturn are of great importance. Mercury is certainly both the exalted planet in Virgo and the ruler. Orthodoxly, it is the hierarchical ruler of Scorpio. Saturn is the orthodox and esoteric ruler of Capricorn. So Mercury is also involved here as well. Okay. Mercury also involved. And the training of the mental polarization in the disciple, the training of the disciplic mind, which helps overcome the allurement of Mercury and the moon. Inclining to lead a man into glamour is the overcoming of glamour, seems to be involved here. So in these cases, or in this case, disciples will be born in one or other of these signs, or with one or other of these signs rising. And you can question yourself whether you are found here as the kind of disciple DK indicates at the stage at which he hints. Now what I'll do here is, this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 96 and B, and let's see what page we're on. We seem to be on page 318. It's a slog, isn't it? Couple of pages at a time, as if forever. And then we will begin our Esoteric Astrology Adventure 96C, page 318. Okay, I think we've gone far enough here. And he will describe this stage of discipleship further. It seems that Pluto should also be taken into consideration, as it rules both Scorpio and Pisces. So Mercury also involved, and let's put that down. Pluto also involved. Okay, and we will go on in just a few moments, beginning Esoteric Astrology 96C, page 318.